Welcome back, new talkers, to the Bob Davis Podcast. So in podcast 650, I haven't talked about or dealt with the issue of a police-involved shooting in a podcast. So I'm going to do that because I wanted to get into this a little bit, considering the shooting that just occurred in South Minneapolis, which is now international news. This is the shooting of the woman by the Minneapolis police, who is an Australian national living here in Minneapolis, and it's a big story. And I was talking with my friend R. Stephen Rogers, who trains police as well as individuals who want to get carry permits and also has a security company. And we talk a lot about officer training, and we talk a lot about training for firearms training for people who carry. And Steve has some great opinions. And so I thought, well, I'm having this conversation, this would make a great podcast. So we're going to talk to Steve in podcast 650. He is standing by as we speak. I got to mention, on July 29th, save the date, because this is the date for the Minnesota 5th District Young Republicans Pub Crawl. You can get tickets now by clicking on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com or visiting MNGOP5.org. You can click on that banner at the top of the page. This is Saturday, July 29th. You can ride the party bus. They're going to go to 6 locations. They've got specials at every stop and more. It's going to be a date to remember. It's going to be a good time, actually. So they're going to go for sure to Lynn Lake, and they're going to go to other places like Psycho Susie's and more. Lots of crawling options from $18 to $38, including the Night Train Party Bus. Just click on that banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com for more info. Now, summertime means party time, and of course, usually when you get ready to have people over, Murphy's Law says you're going to have problems. And if you have emergency service issues, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, especially when it gets hot, the AC issues or broken pipes, things of that nature, because when it comes to keeping all these systems running right, especially these days at home or your business when you have plumbing or heating problems or AC problems, you want reliable service, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back 4 generations in St. Paul, right there in Frogtown. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Once again, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. Okay, I'm going to bring on Stephen, and we're going to, R. Stephen Rogers from Pistol Craft, which trains officers as well as civilians in, carry permit issues and also firearms and other kinds of training. You're going to start hearing a lot about training when it comes to police officers, especially in Minneapolis in the wake of this shooting. And so it's a great time to talk to Steve. Here we go. So in the wake of this shooting in South Minneapolis with Officer Knorr, there's going to be a lot of talk about training, and it hasn't started yet, but it will. You're going to start seeing it covered on all the news stations and everything else. So my understanding is Minnesota has some of the highest training standards in the United States. And you train people in pistol craft and that type of thing. So what do you think of that when you hear something like that?
Well, I guess I tend to approach these things from more of a what is an appropriate amount of training, not how do we rank against everybody else. If everybody's got a low overall level of training compared to what officers should have, then it doesn't matter if we're in first or last place if everybody needs more.
So you feel that officers just don't have enough training?
Oh, absolutely. Private and public sector, it's woefully inadequate for the risks of the job.
What do you feel the appropriate level of training is?
Depending on the agency, some will do firearms twice a year, some a little bit more, but the majority of departments, most officers still qualify with their firearms only once a year.
So how many hours of shooting is that, roughly?
Depends on the qualification that they're doing, but generally you're going to finish a qualification in no more than an hour or two. It's not a very advanced course of fire. It's often as little as 50 rounds. And then if you have ancillary weapons like a rifle or a shotgun, some of the minimum standards are as low as 10 rounds.
And you don't know what the standards are for Minneapolis?
No, like I said, I don't study department by department specifically. I'm more interested in trying to get, you know, civilians and some of the security companies and whatnot that I teach for to just get more. So I don't worry so much about what we're getting as just trying to improve overall levels, especially with hand-to-hand and combatives. I've been focusing on that lately because there's so little of it taught that they don't know it, and so they go to the gun.
So you feel now, and you're going to hear that, critics of the police need to understand that this is a specialized situation where these people are rolling up into situations where they have no idea what's happening. And we already have high training standards, and it's wrong to judge these officers.
Well, I feel there are a lot of opinions out there that are made without enough knowledge of the particulars of the job, the way things shake out, how incidents occur. And I agree that without viewing the evidence and having enough knowledge to look at the evidence in its context, that a lot of judgments are unfounded. And that's why when people ask my professional opinion on these things, most of the time I say, I don't know enough to tell you.
We were talking at one point, I've known Stephen for a while, and you said that when you get an adrenaline rush, you're almost impaired to the degree of being drunk. Talk about that a little bit, about what adrenaline does to someone.
Yeah, it's not so much similar to being drunk, but it can definitely be a significant impairment. There are a series of chemicals that are introduced to the body in periods of stress. You've got adrenaline, you've got endorphins, which are significantly more powerful than morphine. You've got a chemical called cortisol, which can cause memory issues. So you have a host of hormones and chemicals being dumped into the system. And just to give you a feel for, you know, when we train, one of the statistics we show people is whether they find fire victims at doors who pushed and pulled and couldn't remember to turn the knob. So you got to figure most adults have turned hundreds of thousands, millions of doorknobs.
Right.
But when these effects kick in, people forget something as simple as that. People have drowned in 3 feet of water because they couldn't remember they were in 3 feet of water and they couldn't stand up. And so they drowned. That is how
That's
dysfunctional
amazing.
You can become under these conditions if they come in on their full effect.
And so the antidote is training. So if we could compare to a normal soldier, special forces versus a normal soldier, they just get a lot more training, right?
Exactly. And if you compare it to, say, police, the police miss rate on average in Minnesota for the years I've been studying it since the 90s is about 90% miss rate for law enforcement.
What does
that mean?
Shots
fired are recorded and reported to the BCA, and they publish these statistics. Anybody can go and get them.
So, and you're not, again, it's difficult because we don't want to talk too specifically about this because we don't know a lot. But in your general view, you don't feel any of these police officers get enough training. So if it's an experienced officer, then they've been trained basically on the job. And so if it's some guy who's been on the force for or whatever for 10 or 15 years, it's a different. Now, both of these officers, my understanding is that they were the guy, Noor, had something like 18 months and the other officer had even less than that. Do you feel that's enough experience to be able to overcome the impact of something like an adrenaline rush or, you know, an immediate sense of threat or fear? And what would you expect them to do? What are some of the other options rather than going to the gun, let's say?
Well, you know, for something like this, you've got to look at both training and experience. Both have relevance in how you learn to handle things. I know a lot of officers who just seek out additional training on their own, whether it's martial arts, whether it's firearms time at the range, because they want to better themselves. If neither of these individuals, and my understanding is Officer Noor did not have a criminal justice degree.
Right.
Which would, a lot of officers do 2 years of school prior to taking a post-test and becoming law enforcement. If he didn't do that, then we have to ask, how much was he trained? How long was he trained? Where did he receive his training? What did it consist of? Because we don't know. It could have been comprehensive. It could have been glossed over. We don't know. But without that criminal justice degree, we have to ask the question of how much training was involved. And we know even less about the other officer.
What do they teach in a criminal justice degree? So let's suppose you have a degree in business and you decide you want to become a police officer and you go through the police academy here in Minneapolis and you know they hire you. You go through the academy and how much is that? How much training? How long is the academy? And what would you learn in a criminal justice program that you wouldn't learn in, let's say, a business program or a social science program or something like that?
Well, of course, you've got the law and its application. There's a lot of procedural matters. There's a lot of stuff that you have to learn when you're dealing with filling out reports, court, all kinds of stuff like that. So there's significant administrative aspects to being in law enforcement. And, you know, for the record, I'm not law enforcement, but I train them. I've trained with them for many years. But the primary thing you're going to get in that two-year degree is just more time on subjects, more in-depth training, more repetitions, more range time, more physical skills time, and over a period of time. One of the instructor certifications I just took was a week-long, very intensive program. But if those skills aren't practiced regularly, they start to fade. And so if all they had was once through the academy and not a lot of follow-up training on de-escalation or on physical combatives, then they start to not know what to do when something happens because we fall back on our training. And if our training is minimal, we get into that area of, oh, crap, what do I do? And unfortunately, a lot of times they go for the gun.
Because that's their last line of defense, and you know they want to go home. So, right, that's what happens. When you see these situations, and it doesn't, you know, I realize we don't have the biggest problem now is we have this deficit of facts before we've figured out what's happened. And of course, there's so many different ways we can go on this. But what's your reaction when you hear about a so-called officer-involved shooting, and you know, the community's upset, and people run out and say things. You know, Betsy Hodges, mayor of Minneapolis, had a press conference, which was odd to say the best, to say the least. It was odd. How do you react to that, knowing what you know?
I don't often know how some of these are going to shake out. I've had a few cases I've been hired on as an expert witness or testified in where everything that everybody knew, everything I read in the media going into it, the press releases were completely different than what the facts actually presented themselves when you took the entirety, you know, the totality of circumstances, as they would often say in law enforcement training courses, all of the circumstances, all of the facts into account. It's not often what people think. I've seen shootings that everybody thought were completely unjustified, that I would have to side with the officer and say that he had a reasonable fear. He had to do what he did. I've had cases where people thought, well, that was probably pretty reasonable. And I look at it and I'm thinking, no, it was not gun time. So it's something that we definitely need to learn to look at these things a little bit more objectively. And this early, I find it irresponsible to be taking a position because we know very little. Right. I think they've been actually releasing a fair amount of data on this incident, considering that it's still under active investigation. Normally, they'll say nothing.
Right. Well, the officers have said nothing. They've released the 911 tapes, and then they just 20 hours ago in podcast time, you know, they released the police scanner audio. I would assume that they figured that somebody was going to get that eventually anyway, so you can hear the scanner call. I don't know if that's the call in its entirety, but you know, it's out there. And I'll air it right now.
Squad 530, that's 524 Washburn Avenue South. Female screaming behind the building.
Okay. 530, shots fired. Can we get EMS code 3 Washburn and 51st Street? Got one down.
Copy, shots fired at Washburn and 53rd Street. Correction, 51st. Sergeant, to acknowledge shots fired and one down at Washburn. Copy. Copy 502.
506 as well.
Copy 506.
Flight to Puerto Rico and Penny, and turn that.
Copy.
530, I'm starting CPR.
Copy, 530, starting CPR.
530, we're in the north of the alleyway, 51st Street, Washburn, even side.
Copy, north of alley, 50 at 51st Street, even side. Copy, 520, arrived out with them. Squad 530, are you code 4 for medical?
530, code 4 for medical.
530, code 4 for medical at 2345.
530, there are no suspects at large.
Copy 530, no suspects at large.
Oh, 520, where is EMS on this?
EMS is coming, rescue is coming.
502, they're behind me at 53rd and Oliver.
Rescue's arrived.
The fight's enabled. Next squad in if they could block eastbound traffic at 51st and Xerxes. I have 51st and Washburn right here.
521, we'll move there.
And 521, let's get this alley blocked off on the very north side, so off 50th, please.
502, I'm on scene.
Copy 502, on scene.
5502, I'll be arriving in the block.
5502, arriving in the block. Information, 1st Precinct, a sergeant to acknowledge the sound of shots fired. 119, 33rd Street West, two shots heard from the east.
505, copy the call.
At 2348, copy 505.
541.
541.
We heard those sounds from the station. Those are probably aerial fireworks.
Copy 541. Those shots are possibly aerial fireworks.
505.
505.
Request seizure.
505, blast doors came in broken. 505 came in broken.
505, requesting response cars because we have squads tied up with the shooting.
Copy, requesting response cars. Squad 505, are those response cars for 911 or to the scene?
For now, they could come to answer 911 calls, and if we need them, they could go to the scene. But for now, 911 is response.
Copy 505.
5502, have car 9 call me, please.
Yeah, car 9, I'm actually on the way out to Washburn.
502, I'm IC.
Squad 505, precinct 3 and... 4 have shootings right now. We are still checking on 1st and 3rd.
Well, I'm going to talk about the air show, which I'm getting ready to roll out to in Mobile Podcast Command at the end of this week. But I also want to mention Sturgis very quickly. I'm going to be out at Sturgis with Zero 3D. They're going to be at the Black Hills Harley dealer in Rapid City just before the turnoff to go to Sturgis. So if you're riding out there, please come and check out the big green Zero3D.com truck, which will be located right there at the Black Hills Harley dealer in Rapid City. And what they're doing is devoting the next 3 weeks to different products that they make, whether it's lighting options I've talked about or foot pegs or device holders. Here's what you do. Go to Zero3D.com, sign up to get their catalog, which is amazing, and find out what the deals are for this particular week, next week, and the week after as we get ready for Sturgis. And thanks once again to Zero3D.com, C-I-R-O, Zero3D.com. You said that you felt that the city council and the mayor ought to just resign. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
That's over a whole series of issues over many years. I don't want anybody thinking in the context of this specific instance.
Right.
That's where that came from. I've been a resident of Minneapolis for over 20 years, and I have seen just repeated failures in leadership on so many levels that I can't understand how any of them are still in authority. Even at one point, the only time I tweeted in 2 years, I tweeted something like, you know, Betsy Hodges should resign in shame before she embarrasses herself further. And City Pages runs with it and publishes it. So the next thing I know, I got people sending me copies of the magazine.
When did they do that?
It's very frustrating to live here.
Well, you don't live in rich daddy land either. I mean, where do you live again?
I'm in North Minneapolis. Right. I'm in the hood.
So you're in the hood. You see it. You know, do you find it interesting that there seems to be? Do you feel that there seems to be more outrage or less outrage because this is the victim in this case is a well-to-do white lady from 50th and Washburn versus your neighborhood?
I haven't seen nearly the reaction that I would have expected to see, just because the attitude isn't necessarily even racial anymore. And this is nationwide. This isn't just Minneapolis. People are getting really, really, really fed up with what they perceive as excessive force.
Right. And you feel it's a training issue. How what contribution would you make to advance this story a little bit in terms of what kind of training should they receive?
I think, and much like I train, I have a security company. I have officers. I train for other security companies. And we all come to the same place. It should be well-rounded. You should have a balance of awareness and avoidance, de-escalation, how to try to take conflicts and scale them back. If that fails, then you should learn non-injurious combatives, where you can gain control of a person without hitting, kicking, striking, or injury. That would be the ideal. If that fails and it turns more violent, then obviously you may need to have some injurious techniques or some intermediate weapons like tasers, batons, chemical restraints, which are your kind of a pepper spray tear gas combination, and failing that, handgun skills.
Right.
And you have to have a balance of all of these things, as well as training on how to recognize what's an appropriate level of force. Unfortunately, one of the court cases that governs police use of force, Graham versus Connor, has been interpreted to the point where they do because they can and they don't think whether they should.
So you're saying that that's their first course of action when they're startled or concerned or fearing for their own safety, right? Or is that just they just go for the gun to I almost hate to say that because it sounds like a movie title, go for the gun. But at the same time, it sounds like that's what you're saying, that they have a tendency to just that's their default reaction.
I think oftentimes they do because not a lot of people place a ton of trust in tasers. There's so many videos you can see on the internet where they just don't work. The guy gets hit and just keeps coming and attacks the officer or runs off or whatever. You're running out of options that work at a distance besides a handgun.
Right.
And nobody wants to close that distance if they can help it because the closer you get, the greater your threat level. But as an officer, they also can't just walk away. If they were called to deal with the problem, they have to deal with the problem. So they're kind of stuck in that middle ground. And they only have one distance weapon on them. Now, if they felt more comfortable stepping in and taking physical control of a suspect, then maybe they would go to the gun less often. It's situation by situation. It's hard to put a blanket statement on it, but I think that there are a lot of skills that would aid officers in feeling the gun is necessary. You know, a lot less often anyways.
It seems to me to be also appropriate that we might be able to make some suggestions for when you have contact with police officers, what you're supposed to do to try to reduce their stress level. So it sounds to me in this situation, and there's been others where, you know, we're all familiar with the Philando Castile thing because now the trial's over, the officer wasn't found guilty, and, you know, now everyone has seen their side of the story as well as the video that his girlfriend made after the shooting, and there was all kinds of arguments about what he should have done and what he should have said, you know, when he told the officer he had a carry permit and had a gun. Here we have a situation where apparently this woman called the police and then ran up to the police car. What should people do if they have to call the police?
Well, in general, once the police show up, they're going to be in charge. And any hysteria, any excitement causes them to get aggravated. You can watch cops on TV and you'll see people keep, and they're going to ramp it up a notch. So stay calm, you know, kind of a speak when spoken to type of thing, not strictly, but if the cop's talking, don't talk over him. It's just going to aggravate the situation. You want to keep his blood pressure low. You want to keep your hands visible. You want to move slowly and calmly. You don't want to come running up to a cop because it's very easy to perceive a threat where there isn't one. And what a lot of people don't understand is if the perception of the threat is deemed reasonable, it doesn't matter whether there was a threat.
Well, legally, for sure, because that's what they're, and I think what they're saying in this situation is that they thought that there was firecrackers and they thought shots were fired. And by the way, you'll hear that on the scanner that they thought they had heard shots. They didn't say shots fired. They said they had heard shots. I don't know if there's any difference, but, you know, it sounds to me that they were disoriented or it's disorienting. So let's talk about cities, and let's talk about police management, and let's talk about Minneapolis police management, because it appears that there's been a number of these instances. Obviously, you know, the Philando Castile thing is not a Minneapolis or St. Paul issue. I don't know if there's been more of these instances in St. Paul, though, honestly, I haven't heard as much about St. Paul experiences as I seem to be hearing about Minneapolis. Is there a problem with Minneapolis police management? We have a case here where apparently the police chief is on vacation and hasn't come back to deal with this particular situation. It's international news. Are we having a problem? We had an incident where, you know, you had a police officer shoot two dogs recently, and that's on video. It's, if you watch the video, it's just very weird because he climbs over the fence and the dogs approach and he shoots both of them, and that's all we know. Is there a problem with police management in Minneapolis?
A lot of folks think so. I've talked to a number of folks in Minneapolis who are not terribly fond of leadership. There are those in leadership who are not fond of the union. One thing I can say that I think really does hold true and will step outside some of the he said, she said arguments is there. I see a lot more administrative involvement from the mayor's office in the way the police department is run than seems appropriate. You'd think that a chief should be running their department. They should submit a budget request and they should run their department.
Well, what's her, what kind of, what do you mean? Like, what's she been doing? What's the mayor been doing?
Did you see the, there was an issue that was in the media recently about an appointment that the chief went to make with John Delmonico, and the mayor seemed to okay it. And so the chief issued a press release stating that this appointment had happened. And then the mayor freaked out and forced the undoing of said appointment. And then the mayor appointed her own person in that role. Hmm. And so that was very unusual. It was basically, call it a public pissing contest between the two.
Well, and then, go ahead, sorry.
Why the chief has not come back, because if this were my department, if these were my officers, and I heard about that shooting, I would have been on the next plane home.
Right. You know, and who knows what that means or what that's all about?
Who knows? It's a very unusual city and a very unusual relationship between the mayor and the chief. There were rumors that the chief was going to not be reappointed, and then the chief was reappointed. So there's definitely a contentious relationship there, and that can't serve anybody's interests in the end.
Well, and as you know, I think part of the problem in Minneapolis is there's so many of these interlocking boards of people who are appointed and not elected, and so much money being funneled into different neighborhoods using different tools and things, and there's all this stuff happening in Minneapolis that... and in the midst of all this, we're hearing all this stuff about crime downtown, and which, by the way, as I said in my previous podcast, you know, it's hard for me to tell a difference these days from, you know, 30 years ago or 20 years ago downtown. So I'm skeptical of all these, suddenly all of these articles about more higher crime. We had, and it's not the first time it's happened. There was a shooting in Uptown, right across from the Lunds on Lagoon. And when these things happen in places like Uptown, you know, they happen apparently all the time over north. But when they happen in Uptown, suddenly people get up in arms and concerned, and they're, or downtown, they're concerned about safety. And is that an enforcement question, the safety questions?
Well, one thing I've noted over the years, and this has been, you know, confirmed by many Minneapolis police, is at least on the north side, they're seriously understaffed. I've waited, as you know, witnessing a violent assault, I've waited almost 2 hours and not gotten a cop.
Wow.
There are times when the cops just don't show up because unless it involves somebody shooting at somebody, they just don't have enough cops. And I've been told on more than one occasion that, you know, on such and such an hour, you're on your own. They're not coming north of Broadway, and everything north of Broadway all the way up to Brooklyn Center is basically unpatrolled because it's so bad down there that they can't leave that area because there's too much to respond to down there. Plenty of times with the scanner on, I hear cops coming in from other precincts on a regular basis to back them up because there's just too much happening for them. So they're definitely understaffed up here, and I don't know if there's you know, equivalent or overstaffing in other precincts, or if the entire city's understaffed. I haven't studied those statistics, but there's definitely staffing issues, and I consider that an administrative issue as well.
Am I incorrect in saying that we're not hearing as much about St. Paul police, or are they doing a better job?
I don't hear much about incidences in St. Paul other than the shooting over in Mounds Park, which was an export from North Minneapolis committing a crime in St. Paul. That's our best export in NOMI. I don't hear a lot about instances in St. Paul. Now, I was leaving a security job I was working the other night, and I saw no less than 12 or 13 squads on Kellogg over by Robert, and I didn't see anything in the media. I have no idea what it was about. But whatever it was, they responded very quickly and dealt with it. And if it didn't make the media, then they must have stopped it from turning into something really bad.
Well, the other question there is are you aware of any differences between the way St. Paul trains and selects officers versus Minneapolis?
I haven't looked into their training as much. I've trained with them. One of the instructor certifications I took was hosted by the St. Paul PD. They seem to have a... You know, they gave me a copy of all of the courses they were going to be running that summer and that fall. And it seemed a nice and pretty comprehensive list of available courses for the officers to take. I don't know whether Minneapolis does that or not. They're a little more internalized about it. I don't think they host as many outside agencies and do as much stuff like that, at least not that I've seen.
So what we should be looking for in the wake of all this, and it's not just this the shooting of this this woman in Minneapolis, it's also the Castile thing, although that was not a Minneapolis situation, but well, I guess Jamar Clark certainly was. But we should be looking for the city to do what? What should the city council, president, who oddly enough has been completely silent when, you know, she's often not silent, the mayor and the Democratic Party, which is really responsible for Minneapolis. They I don't know, are there any Republicans? There was one Republican on the Hennepin County, but he's running for governor, so... it's really...
I don't think there's been an elected Republican in Minneapolis in at least 40 years,
right,
Bob.
So what should we be looking for them to do in terms of leadership?
Well, much like your parents probably taught you and mine taught me, own up, step up, admit that you've got problems and deal with them. You see things like $50,000 drinking fountains and money spent on fancy streetlights and all this other stuff that they're doing. They need to worry about their training budgets. They need to get, you know, the appropriate number of officers in each of the precincts. They should shuffle them around from the low crime areas to the high crime areas. People should rotate in and out of community service oriented policing where they get to know the residents, they get to know the business owners, so they feel a sense of connection with the area they're serving, and they're not just chasing around bad guys all the time. They need to up their training. They need to be more transparent about what they do.
I think the main thing here is just to give people something to think about besides what happened and who did what, and to try to advance this beyond the immediate street situation, because all we're hearing about is city pages are writing the articles about crime. People are freaking out because this happened, and is it because he was a Muslim, and, you know, all these other questions. They're not addressing the more important stuff, which is exactly what we're talking about, which is the training and everything else.
Yeah, and training that's, you know, reality-based, that's realistic. I was reading an article from a cop where they stood, fired two rounds, moved to the next line on the thing, fired two rounds, and then he got into dynamic training where you're actually shooting each other with simulated firearms. And when he reviewed the video, he found that he fired twice and stopped while the bad guy kept shooting at him.
Oh, so that's often why they empty the clip, for example.
Yeah, better training, more realistic training is clearly needed. You can't just take a de-escalation course and say that you've made your officers better. You need regular ongoing training at least 2, 3, 4 times a year, not just once a year for guns, not just once a year for defensive tactics. You need to have at least regular monthly, quarterly training so that it actually sticks with them, so they're able to draw upon it when situations happen. I think we're doing those officers a grave injustice with inadequate training. And then they're the ones who take the bulk of the heat when something goes wrong. And I'm not justifying or excusing any particular event, but I can say that I have seen situations go down where the officer was vilified and hung out to dry, and he did the best he could with the training he had and the situation he was stuck into. And I've seen it with civilians the same way. I've seen perfectly legitimate self-defense charges, second-degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecuting attorney's office, the cops, very few people know this material very well.
R. Stephen Rogers from Pistolcraft, thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Always a pleasure.
On a lighter note, I am headed out to the Air Show, and I'll be there with Alpha Systems. So look for Alpha at the EAA Air Show in Oshkosh. Look for the Bob Davis Podcast, Mobile Podcast Command, right under the tower by the media building at EAA. And again, if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, don't forget that Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. This is the amazing indicator. Great visual display of how much lift your wing is producing, which is so critical on takeoffs and landings. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com for more information about Alpha Systems, and we'll see you at EAA. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for emergency service in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul to the suburbs, Minneapolis and St. Paul, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks again for listening to Podcast 650, the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes, off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. And I appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and your donations for Mobile Podcast Command, Diesel Fuel at thebobdavispodcast.com. Just look for the banner that has the picture of Mobile Podcast Command in the snow, but really it's the desert. It's the White Sands Desert in New Mexico on one of the big trips I took, which were really cool. So you click on that and make a donation. Really, really appreciate it. And I will see you at EAA, the air show at Oshkosh. Thanks for listening to Podcast 650.